a dysfunctional car crash of a campaign years in the making. This is our look at the 2019 general election review. Welcome to the Lib Dem Pod. Hello and welcome to the Lib Dem Podcast. We've got the full gang back. We have got Owen, Richard, Lisa and Laura all here to discuss what has been a massive week in the Lib Dem party. Not just the review. Obviously, we've had the leadership timetable, which we're probably not even going to touch on in this episode because so much is going on and we're so busy that we would have to have an episode every other week. But first of all, hello, gang. How are you all doing?
Hey.
Right. Well, we can't start anywhere else but the election review. Dysfunctional, car crash, colossal mistakes spread over years. So, and I suppose, Laura, given that you were so close to getting elected, this is probably the rawest for you, I imagine. Do you want to kick us off with what you thought of the review?
To be honest, I thought the review was great. And I mean, actually, you know, the election was pretty brutal at times. Obviously, we all worked incredibly hard, and to win out, to lose so closely was, you know, very disappointing. But actually, to get a review like this that kind of illustrates so many of the problems that were sort of underlying that experience, it's actually quite cathartic and quite vindicating to read through it. And I think actually understanding what the background to sort of some of the issues that we felt on the ground has actually been quite useful. And I think that, you know, if the issues raised in this report are taken forward, then it will put our party in a much stronger place and hopefully, you know, get to the finish line next time knowing that we've done everything we could. Because I think that was what was so frustrating about this election, was to lose narrowly and feel that actually had some decisions been made differently, or had some of the party's approach been different, then, you know, we might have been able to just squeak it over the line.
And I suppose, Lisa, you were also in a target seat, missed out narrowly as well. And I mean, there's a lot of chat in the report talking about faults on all sides, local parties feeling hurt and damaged and things like that. Now that this is how you've obviously had time to process since December, but this review's come out, does it kind of vindicate some of the things you were feeling, or is it wide of the mark of what you were feeling? What's your take on it?
So it was, losing general elections is hard, and this was a brutal general election. I agree very much with Laura's diagnosis of it there. We were a team who moved forward. So Hazelgrove constituency, where I stood, voted to leave. And we had a cracking set of local election results earlier in 2019. We won 6 out of 6 wards, massive majorities in all of them, and then we didn't win the general election. So it was a brutal election, it really was. But I think this review is a really good review, and it's really useful. And I think for me, it describes some of the problems that were many years in the making. This wasn't there were some problems that were individual to 2019, but there were others that are over a decade in the making in terms of how we're organised, in terms of our culture, in terms of some of the stuff that we need to change to do better and to win more elections. I think it was a really good thing that it wasn't a really personalised review, because that wouldn't have been helpful. It wouldn't have been as constructive. For me, I'm really pleased that it's so constructive and it's forward-looking about how we can move forward as a team, and how actually it's all of our responsibility to do this stuff better. For me, the bit that hasn't got as much coverage and discussion as I was expecting was the bit about culture, and the bit about how we as Lib Dems, if we're in the audience of question time, we don't applaud our leader. We ask them a really difficult question about Lib Dem policy because we think we should be doing better. And I think you see the other teams applaud their leader uproariously, and support them, whatever, and have a much more tribal, outward-looking tribal way, whereas we look internally and have a go at ourselves, which I think is just our nature and makes loads of sense because of the way we are sometimes, but isn't always as helpful when you're fighting elections and you're all trying to be on the same team.
Richard, I mean, Lisa's just mentioned there about, you know, a decade of issues not really being tackled by HQ, and this could have been and maybe should have been seen. I mean, if you look at Winlove, we've just been watching that kind of 2010 election day coverage and the disappointment the Lib Dems felt on that day as well. I mean, you look at maybe going back to 2005 before we actually think of actually that's when it did it start to slip. But I mean, what are your views, Richard? I mean, is this a systemic problem that actually we've talked, Lisa's mentioned culture, but we've just got to get a grasp of it?
Absolutely. Well, having personally been involved in losing 14 general elections, perhaps I'll look at it a little bit broader than most. But it seems to me that there are some important lessons that the party needs to learn from local government campaigning. So let's take St Albans, where Daisy Cooper did such a good job. What does St Albans do every time there's a local elections? It produces six to fix. It doesn't produce 66 to fix or 106 to fix. It produces six to fix. So in people's minds, probably the people of St Albans don't know all six of them, but with a bit of luck, they know three of them. And they don't know those when we go into general elections nowadays. We're lucky if they remember one P on income tax for education. In the second one, in the last one, it was, you know, revoke Article 50 or stop it. So we need to have a much broader level of understanding of us. Now, we achieve that at local level, because as councillors, we're highly respected in the communities because we wouldn't get elected if we weren't. Where we have strong local campaigners who've been around some time, so this excludes Lisa and Laura in that context. People like Alistair Carmichael, perhaps that's a slightly different situation, have been able to achieve that personal relationship. But it's that personal relationship that then leads to the understanding of what liberal democracy is. Because as we discussed with Alistair when he was on, every time he spoke, I thought, oh, bloody good, thank goodness, he's a really good liberal Democrat. So we've got to reorganise our party from the bottom up. And the problem we've had since 2008, I would say, is that we've had a top-down culture in a bottom-up party. And either we've got to marry those two cultures, or we've got to make sure that the party at the top reflects the party at the bottom. And that's where I'm very confident about the outcomes of this report, and even more confident following the federal board's decision about what to do with it. So I'm far more confident about our future now than I was 8 or 9 days ago.
And Owen, you were a parliamentary candidate, a first time candidate in an area where Lib Dems aren't particularly strong. You're not like a Hazel Grove or a Sheffield where you do have lots. And not to big you up anyway, but I remember listening to you on Radio Lancashire debating a seasoned Tory MP and a very well known Labour county councillor, and you held your own, punched well. But how did this election affect in seats where we don't have a massive presence?
It was quite interesting. I mean, from the get-go, I think we knew that pragmatically we couldn't win, and there was no way that we would win with the base that we had. So we had to do what was expected of us, which was that we sent our volunteers to target seats where hopefully we were going to hold or at least take some seats. So the majority of my team went to help Tim Farron up in Westmorland, which was fantastic. They were there most days, I believe. But in terms of how the election was run, there was a few things that I think probably we could have done with better training, I suppose, for the local groups. I mean, some of the stuff that I saw when I went to go to Hazelgrove and the Cheadle offices was incredible. You know, there were Brizographs pounding out literature all the time. Delivery and door knocking crews were coming in at all hours. And it felt like a real sense of community. And it was something that I realised now had been built up over years and years and years of working that local level. And I think it's the opportunity now, I suppose, for smaller local parties who have either never really had the opportunity or have never really done very successfully. Now is the time, especially now that we're all stuck at home, to take the opportunity to go and ask your local big parties, ask them for some advice, ask them for some training. Because for us, I think maybe in one or two general elections time, we could be a serious contender in Morecambe, perhaps.
And I'm going to try and marry up what you've just said and what Lisa said before about culture. Is that, and this might be a little bit controversial, what's the point in having a local party executive, being a treasurer of a local party or the chairman of a local party, if your goal isn't to try and win seats locally? Do we have too many people who are sitting back and want the National Party to do everything for us? And is it actually, we've just got to pick ourselves up, dust off our jackets and go out and do it? Is that a problem with our part? The culture goes not just at the HQ, which the report highlights, but actually we've all got to take a little bit of responsibility for it.
I think, yes, we absolutely have. And I think this, I get a bit frustrated when people obsess about who the leader's going to be and what the leadership timetable is, as though a leader will be the silver bullet that fixes all of the issues that we have. The leader's an important part of the team. Please don't think I'm saying something else. However, if we want our party to change, we all have to change it. And if we want our teams to work more functionally and to work with other local teams, we have to take ownership of that. The National Party, I think, does some stuff to facilitate that really well. It could do an awful lot more to facilitate that working together and that networking and that empowering local teams to do stuff. But if we think somebody else is going to come and just fix everything, we're in the wrong place.
I'm not sure, sorry, Laura. I don't think, I think there's a lot in that and I completely agree. But I think one of the things that comes out quite strongly in the report is the need to think about what the roles of HQ and what the roles of local campaigns are. And I think one of the things that was so frustrating in this election was that the extent of micromanagement from HQ a lot of the time. You know, we were getting these leaflet templates, told we had to use them, where we couldn't even edit three quarters of the leaflet. And, you know, they were sending out leaflets to our seats without even showing them to us. So the first I would know about a leaflet landing in Sheffield Hallam was when I started getting emails complaining about it. And that's just not a way to work. You know, like, I know Sheffield Hallam better than, you know, the people in HQ do. And actually letting me have some influence over what, or, you know, be able to ideally run my own campaign, I think is a much better way to win elections than sort of HQ micromanaging it. And actually, I think one of the things that comes out in the report is this kind of decision making that wasn't taking place. And I do wonder if actually, if they'd kind of stepped back a bit, stopped trying to micromanage everything at the local level and focused on those key strategic decisions, would they have been better placed to make them? And I think that kind of feeds through to this idea of kind of development seats and almost like proto development seats. So if you kind of think of your development seats as your seats that are kind of maybe in one election's time, there'll be a target, or two elections time, but you can see that they're on that pathway. And then a kind of proto development seats, which is like, we've got a keen team, but we've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
And actually, what's the role of HQ for those seats? And I think it has to be kind of supportive and facilitative. So, you know, if you are somebody who is, you know, keen, you decide that actually, I think this seat could be a Liberal Democrat seat, what do I do next? You know, it's very unclear, you know, who you ask. Like, actually, if you're, you know, if you're going to conference a lot, if you're, you know, a councillor already, if you're a member of ALDC, or if you know people in the party, then you can probably find out. But if you're somebody who's doesn't have those links already, how do you know which links you're supposed to make? How do you form all of that? What, you know, is there a kind of pathway for a kind of proto-development seat to become a development seat, and for a development seat to become a target seat? And what I really feel is almost a missed opportunity here in this election is that, you know, there was this idea of kind of the top target seats and the second group of target seats, and actually differentiating those two and giving different support to the two groups, I think would have been quite important. Because actually just sending leaflets to seats that were building up from nothing, that didn't have the same level of experience, was probably the right thing to do. It's not the right thing to do when you've been working that seat for 10 years. So I think kind of thinking about those different, you know, what's the role of HQ in kind of kickstarting a seat? You know, if you get an MRP poll and it goes, hey, you know, this seat looks like it, a lot of other Lib Dem seats demographically, what can we do about that? Then what's the role of HQ in kickstarting that seat versus what's the role of HQ in supporting a seat that already has a strong team versus what's the role of HQ in supporting a seat that's maybe a bit of a kind of black hole of activism now, but has a really keen team that want to turn that around, and just really thinking about what those different levels of support are. And actually, when people are able to do it, get out the way and let us do it. Because it's so frustrating when, you know, you can see something going wrong. And it's the whole sort of structure and the lack of feedback loops are all set up in a way that makes it difficult or impossible to do anything about it.
I strongly agree with what Laura's said there. And not every seat needs the same support. And I think one of the things I've been encouraged by is that that work is... I'm aware that work is starting to happen and look at seats in different tiers, because Hallam will have a track record of local campaigning, which means that actually the messages in Hallam will be more compelling if you're talking about, I don't know, the medical centre that Laura has personally saved. That will be a more compelling message than something top down. If you're looking at one of the other seats that doesn't have the track record, the message is being more national for a while, because in the absence of other stuff, makes sense. I think asking target seats what they need, I mean, it's revolutionary talk this, right, rather than telling them what they need, I think would be a really good thing to do. And I've been really encouraged that work is taking place.
Perhaps we can call it liberalism.
I agree with you both.
Oh,
I go back to 1974.
Well, thank goodness somebody is, Richard.
In 1974... we had got 26% of the vote and 13 seats because we targeted everywhere. And if we'd have targeted at the time, I don't know, 30 seats, we might have got 25 of them. And the reason I disagree with you is not that party headquarters should not micromanage the likes of your two constituencies, because clearly they shouldn't. What I disagree with is they should have had, they were putting huge resources into seats where there was no local track record, where there was no team. So I wouldn't have put a penny extra into them, because it was sure as hell we weren't going to win them. And when we got requests, send teams to so-and-so, I thought, where? You must be joking. And we didn't send anyone there. We put people in Southampton, that was a long way, Southport, until we were told not to. And then we basically concentrated because of our historic links with Tom Morrison in his constituency. But we wasted a shed load of money on constituencies where there was never a snowball's chance in hell of us winning. And that's the first lesson we got, £13 million. To get 11 seats. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, the words pick a ward and win it don't apply in the middle of an election.
Yes.
Wow. The interesting point that I think also hasn't had as much coverage as I hoped it might, and so I'll just keep making the point whenever I'm asked, is about all the seats where we win have a strong local government base. And not looking at that when thinking about targeting seems like an oversight, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, me and Lisa were at the Northwest Regional Exec after the election, and I made the point, again, it goes back to Richard's thing, the polling was so optimistic, and the target seats, and there was a bit of naivety among some saying, well, you know what, we should go for a 200-seat strategy, which is ridiculous. We don't have that sort of resources to do it. And I remember making the point on one of the online forums saying, what would you rather have, 50 seats and second in 100, or become second in 200 and only have 10? And the amount of people who wanted the 10 seats instead of the 50 is frightening sometimes in our party. But going back to the local... I'm going to read it directly because I've made several quotes here. The campaign was unconnected from the reality of what the party could achieve on the ground. And it absolutely could. And again, I'm not going to give away any figures here, but me and Lisa had a chat about this in the Northwest, about the level of canvassing that had been done between the 2017 and the 2019 election was abysmal in some of the seats that we were supposed to be targeting. They had done nothing to build up any sort of momentum to win a seat in 2019. you know, do a little, do it often, pick somewhere and win it.
So actually, it's a mild disagreement with what Richard said, actually. I think one of the things I'd really like to see the party doing is thinking a little bit more creatively about how we get support to target seats and how we win. And if I think of an example of a neighbouring local seat, say like the Derbyshire Dales, where I know the candidate there, really great guy, used to be the headmaster of a local school in Sheffield, brilliant guy. So I kind of went to see him at the beginning of the election and we were sort of talking about what support they'd be able to offer. And he was saying, well, we want to get our leaflet out, which is completely reasonable. They wanted to deliver a leaflet across the constituency. But actually, you know, maybe one of the things that the party could be doing is paying for their leaflet to be posted and then they can come and help us in Sheffield Hallam, you know, because of the expenses rules, you know, we're not going to be able to post our leaflets out here, but maybe we can post their leaflet and then they can come and help us. So just thinking a little bit more creatively about there are, you know, how there are ways to help, you know, what's actually going to help us win, you know, what is the blockage for different seats? You know, is it bodies? Is it money? Is it, you know, what is it in different seats? Because it will be different things in different places. And actually, if like paying for a free post in a bunch of seats that we're unlikely to win is going to make activists in those seats feel more able to travel and help in target seats, then we will win more seats overall. And maybe that's something we should consider. You know, maybe at the next election, actually, you know, it's a while off, but maybe at the next election, we should be trying some different things in different regions and seeing what works because, you know, it's going to be a long way back to where we want to be. Let's try a few things and be experimental.
I don't think we're disagreeing with each other because what you were saying is still, how do we provide the maximum support in whether it's 20, 40 or 50 that we're going to win? So in Liverpool, we bought an envelope stuffing machine, which was absolutely miraculous. So we were able, with about eight people, to do a three-way split to every, you know, to the whole of Liverpool, even the constituencies that we couldn't win, that released everyone else to go out door knocking. But we did have the money to provide the envelope. I mean, we spent £7,000 doing that, and the envelope machine was £600. So it was a very cost-effective way. But we made sure that most of the targeting was into the eight wards that were important to us in three constituencies. And I have no doubt at all that I would now be sitting here with 13 councillors, not 10, because of what we did during the general election, which held our own, but released people to go to other seats. So you're right, we do have to look at what a contribution to another seat means. One of the reasons I go to by-elections and party conference is the buzz it gives me. Hey, I've been with 50 people today, not me and the dog. And these are things, well, I haven't got a dog, by the way, but these are the things that we can learn from. So, yes, paying for someone else's free post leaflet so they can come and help you, that would have helped them as well as you. Excellent idea.
We've talked a lot about target seats, which I think is right, because people remember much more how many seats we win rather than how many places we move from fifth to fourth in. So I think we absolutely should concentrate most on target seats. But I think those smaller local parties and those places where we are looking at whether we hold our deposit or not, I think some data for them about what would be really useful would be really useful. So saying to them, well, if you put out a free post, it's likely to have this impact on your vote. If you are putting out a free post, concentrate on those areas, on those wards that are your target wards. And helping them make informed decisions about how best to use their time, because it's right that we should concentrate our efforts in places where we can win. But actually, Rich has made an important point there about how all elections are part of a continuum, and a general election shouldn't be looked at just in isolation. It feeds into local elections, and local elections feed into general elections, and they're all part of the same continuum of encouraging people in our areas to vote with them. So I think giving people data that will help them make decisions is another thing that the National Party can do.
Absolutely. And I think looking at deposits as well would be another big one, because I think for a lot of local parties, you know, fundraising is such a big challenge. Mm-hmm. And if you think you're likely to lose your deposit, but actually you might be able to save it with a bit of work, you know, you're going to stay and try and save the deposit. You know, you're not going to, and that might not actually be the most effective thing to do. Even if you are trying to build up that seat, you know, actually it might be more effective to concentrate on one ward and lose the deposit in the constituency overall. And that might give you a better chance of moving forward in the long run if you're putting yourself in a position to win that one ward at the next local elections. So I think, I absolutely agree. Like, we need that data, and we need to think about what support constituency parties and local parties need wherever they are in that continuum, and just think a little bit more creative about it beyond just, well, here's some leaflets.
Yeah, and I think it's up to also, I mean, me and Owen are trying to revive a little bit of Lancashire. That's what we're trying. I mean, Lancashire doesn't have a single MP, you know, and there are vast parts of Lancashire that don't have a single councillor. And so we are working together. We've set up a Lancashire group to try and say, okay, what local party is a complete startup? How do we get moved to the main opposition in Preston? What do Pendle have to do to get back control of the council? All of them are in different stages. But if we can work together and train together, then that's a way we can build. And also, it's great planning. So if a seat does suddenly, like if Burnley suddenly springs back into life, then actually a way that we can then direct it to maybe win that MP seat again. This is important because we always talk about, you know, it's never a one election cycle, and you've got to think long term. But I want to move us slightly away from the campaigning bit and onto message, because a big part of the report was on how we got our messaging wrong. And it talks about a clarity of vision, but I want to again read a line from directly from the report. It says, outside of political geeks and party members, our messages were largely unnoticed. And I have no problem with our manifesto. But me and Richard have talked numerous times about, you know, basically we are in marketing. We are salespeople for what we believe in. And we are not selling our product good enough. And so what do we do to become better at doing that as a party?
Right. Well,
a role has been advertised this week in HQ. We talk a lot about top down and bottom up. And that role, I think the hope is that the person taking that role will be part of the answer to that. I think we as on the ground campaigners know our communities in such a way that when we're working out how to phrase our message, we go out and try it on some doorsteps and see what works best. And I think trying it with real people in the areas we hope to win, I think is something. And being from our communities and of our communities is an important part of that. But there was there's a Tim Farron anecdote, which he has repeated to make the point several times in my earshot since the December 19 general election. And I will relay it poorly, but hopefully give the thrust, which is in the December 19 general election, we played what we thought people should be listening to. We played the music, we were DJing a set, and we were playing John Peel specials that we thought they should be interested in listening to. And actually, when you're at a wedding, if weird music comes on, nobody's on the dance floor. Whereas if you play things that, yeah, we like, but everybody else likes as well, then the dance floor is full and you're a more successful DJ. So I think playing the music we think people should be listening to and talking about things we think they should be interested in, Brexit, revoke, in particular, is one way of describing how we ended up here.
But if there's funny music comes on, it usually at a wedding, it usually means that granddad's got hold of the DJ and slipped in a few bob. I speak from experience. But it all comes back to what we were talking about before of things to fix and what do people want to talk about. So let's have a hefty debate about the health service. Do we want 10 million for this or 5 billion for that? People aren't interested in that. Is my hospital going to close? What's going to happen to young people in the area with this? And that's why we very much need to synthesize the big picture messages, but only four or five of them, in such a way that Lisa and Laura in particular can say, and in Cheadle, and in Sheffield Hallam, this means. Because people do want to talk about their hospital, their road, their kids' schools, their, our, not some high-flown debate.
So, Laura, I want to kind of, keeping on the messaging thing, I want to read a little bit extra to you, because you've talked about how some of the leaflets that landed in Sheffield didn't work. So this is, again, an extract from the report. Messages designed for a conference attended by Liberal Democrat Party members rather than the general public. When the electorate focused on them for the first time in the election campaign, they went down badly. And this is a problem you see on Twitter and everything else. You live within a bubble. You know, most people don't really think about politics that much. And actually, and it's only during a general election, even then, they sometimes only do a passing glance to it. So again, Lisa kind of stole my thunder a little bit by basically exactly what we are selling, something that most people don't know they want. And so we have to convince them that they want it. And it's really tough. So how do you do that in Sheffield?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to read another quote, which is, it's basically lacking balance between qualitative and quantitative data to aid decision making. And I think that's the key, is that we need to be seeking out data, and it needs to be the quantitative evidence that you get from polling or that you get from kind of Connect data. But also that qualitative data that might come from focus groups, or it might come from consultation with campaigners in different parts of the country. But I think actively seeking those diverse forms of data ultimately needs to be how we develop our messaging, and, you know, talking to people who are connected with communities in different areas and getting that feedback. And I think in the end, you know, you do have to have a centrally dictated message. You know, you can't have everybody determining their own message. You need to have some coherence, you know, especially, you know, nowadays when sort of every leaflet anywhere in the country can be shared on social media and anyone anywhere in the country can see it. You know, we are not in a world where we can, you know, deliver vastly different messages in different country, nor should we. But actually making sure that you are seeking those diverse forms of data, that you are consulting with different people, getting that, you know, that information, those different viewpoints, and then feeding that into your message, and then letting people sell that locally in the way that they see as most appropriate. And I think it has to be that balance between, you know, what does the centre have to do? You know, and this is not a kind of, actually, it's not even a campaigning point. This is a liberal democracy point. Mm. You know, what can only be done in the centre versus what can be done locally? Mm. We believe as a political party that we should be decentralising things as far as possible. Some things need to be done in the centre, in the campaign. I would argue that that is the messaging. Some things need to be done locally, which is how do you actually deliver it locally and how do you run a campaign? And just thinking about that balance. So I think... yeah, I mean, I think the consultation is key. I mean, I think I would also say with the conference that we do have an opportunity this year to do something differently. And I think one of the sections that is sort of most striking is the section on the revoke policy, which was, you know, clearly adopted because it looked likely that conference was going to adopt it anyway. And actually, the reality is that that policy wasn't even that popular with all of our members. It was popular with the minority within minority that goes to conference. And actually, how we can't be in a world where we're adopting policies that are not, you know, that aren't what most of our members want, let alone the country as a whole, let alone people who are liberals in the country as a whole. So I think we really need to find a way to make our policy in a way that allows us to consult with a wider group of people and bring in a wider set of views. And I think the online options that are being explored for this year, although, you know, we would never want to have done this in these awful circumstances, you know, they do offer an opportunity to start doing things differently and hopefully make sure that we're not in that position again.
I mean, what I'd like to see from ALDC, Owen, is what can you pick up in the pub? Not what, who can you pick up in the pub, but what can you pick up in the pub? Because actually, I've got to go out the door here. Three people will give me opinions on what's going on. And I disagree with you, John. I think most people are interested in politics, but they don't see it through the prism of party politics.
Yeah, yeah.
If you use your ears in the park, the pub, the coffee shop, in the queue at the supermarket, you get a lot of feedback about what people are thinking, how they're thinking, and why they're thinking about it. That's what needs to come forward. Now, we then need to view that in the prism of our policies. So we might hear out there that we want to bring back hanging. And we say, sorry, that's not on, that's not us. But a lot of what we hear can then be explained and brought into a Liberal Democrat background that people don't think of. So I think Laura's right. See, policy starts, goes that way. You can't make it up in a vacuum and then see what happens to it. You test it out and bring it up. But that's why I'm in this party, because I believe all this stuff. I want to see everything going that way, with the centre doing as little as possible.
I think one thing that we as a party often struggle with is, and I agree with those who have commented about the policy of our manifesto, and we often have the right policy for the country, for the future of our country. One of the things we struggle with as a team is to explain that with emotion. We're very good at the theory and the practicalities and the head stuff, the thinking side of explaining why we believe this and why this would be the right answer. We're not always as good as explaining the emotion behind it and speaking with emotion. And that's part of who we are. And I think some of what the centre can do is to have people who are really good at that. So having good at people translate Lib Dem into language that everybody can access.
Yeah, but it's not just the language.
No, you're absolutely right. It is.
I believe, and that's why we get on, that bugger cares for church ward or whatever wards that you represent. You get it over there, we don't seem to be able to cap. We care for the health service. We're angry when this happens. We're quite nice about it and would like to object to it. We've got to just be bloody angrier.
I couldn't agree with Councillor Kemp more. We are just so very nice all the time. And on occasion, some of us may veer towards excessive wetness. And I think that actually being more bloody angry and livid and determined to fix things and letting people see that would be a good thing.
And I think it's good. You're both right, because why did we get involved in politics? Why did any of us on this call get in? We didn't get involved in politics because we thought, A, we're going to lead to money, success and fame. I got involved because I was angry. I was angry at Iraq. I was angry at ID cards. I was angry that this country could be better than what the other two parties were giving us. And I think that, and you're right, we have to kind of build on that and grow on it. And unfortunately, we have to now get on to something that is awkward. And I do appreciate the report says some people will be upset with the report. We have to talk a little bit about leadership and what happened with Joe Swinson and everything. And the team that was around. Again, just for listeners, I will read out a section of this where it says, those who were supposed to be leading on paper were often not leading in person because decision-making was being taken elsewhere, often in the leaders' team and sometimes by Joe herself. This not only slowed things down, but concentrated decision-making in a small group whose belief in the leader and their mission was so strong that challenge was at best ignored and at worst actively discouraged. If you have, like what happened with Corbyn, oh, that was on a lot bigger scale. If you have a cult of sycophants around you who don't challenge you, then it's not surprising. You are not getting what Richard's just been talking about, a rounded opinion of what things are outside of your bubble. So without being critical, how much does Joe have responsibility for that? Or is this the structure in the party?
I think if you're some responsibility comes with being the leader, of course it does. And there were some things that Joe did really well, and there were some things that I'm sure she would say she could have done differently. I think the structures did you know that the chair of FCEC is supposed to be the chair of the general election campaign? FCEC, the Federal Communications and Elections Committee.
So I'm glad you told me what that was, because most people in the party.
It's an internal party.
Well, that's one we can chop.
Chair of the general election campaign, and I think anybody. One of the recommendations in the report is that role is looked at, and I think it will be a discussion within the party about that. I think it's where decision making sits, and I think looking at, you know, a younger, young for politics, female leader is going to get a different ride of things than an older bloke. That is just the society we live in. And not planning for that probably was an oversight. I'm putting that fairly gently. And there are things that are different for us as a third party than they would be for a different party, for a larger party, or indeed for a smaller party. So I think there are structures that were clearly not working and that were dysfunctional, and there were relationships that weren't working and were dysfunctional, and decision making was being taken where it was being taken, not necessarily where it should have been being taken. So I think it's both. I think it's the individuals and it's the structures.
Well, anyone else want to come on leadership, or are we happy to move on to something else?
Let's not make it a Joe leadership thing, because I think Lisa is right. It's the way the party is structured. If you look, with all due respect to those from the North who do take part, and well done, Lisa, for taking a key role, I've been looking at roughly the same names coming forward for the last 20 years or so. They're mostly metropolitan Londoners. They're in the swing of things. And then they're often supplemented by very, very keen people who are interns plus, because we don't pay them much, but have never actually been through an election. So you have this sagacity of the out of touch with the linked with the enthusiasm of people who haven't been there before. What we've got to find is much more effective structures. And we start with the federal board, I'm afraid. You cannot have a board of more than 12, 15 people. They might have subcommittees, one of whom goes on to it, but those subcommittees shouldn't have more than 12 or 15 people, and probably less. We don't have an effective decision-making structure. We say, oh, we don't need one of those because we're one member, one vote. So we've got to have radical reform of our decision-making structure so we know who's making the decisions.
Completely agree with that. And I think we also need to look at the English Council. And I think one of the...
that's another thing I'd chop personally.
One of the decisions that will come back to haunt us, if it hasn't already, is the decision to cut the membership incentive scheme that was taken by the English Council with sort of almost no warning halfway through the last parliament. Something that had been sort of enormously successful in supporting local parties to increase their membership, to retain members, to engage members, and had also helped with local resourcing, was then sort of suddenly cut by the English Council without any real consultation, without any notice given. In fact, it was even done retrospectively. And you just think, you know, what is this body, and who elects it? How is it chosen? Who's on it? How does it make these decisions? How can I find out what decisions they are making, when they're making them, who's making them, what's up for discussion, and therefore, you know, go find out who local English Council. I don't know, do I have an English Council representative? If I do, I could go and talk to them about these issues if I knew what they are. But, you know, if I'm pretty engaged with the party, you know, I spend quite a lot of time doing Lib Dem stuff. And if I have no idea how this works, you know, what on earth chance does sort of a new member who joined, you know, because of Brexit a couple of years ago have?
And it kind of leads, again, I want Owen to come in on this again, because it's, if you feel so removed from the party structures, there's very little incentive for areas that are not big and powerful and have big groups to grow at all, because it just seems like another, like you said, I mean, most people couldn't name who's on their regional party exec or anything like that. There's a disconnect here from our local parties to the bigger structures. So Owen, how do you think the party should kind of bridge that gap?
Well, I suppose there's multiple ways of going about it. You could say that it is HQ's sort of role to take the lead on that and say that they should be the ones engaging with the new members and saying, look, this is how the party works. This is the kind of thing that you could do if you wanted to work within the party. But again, it could also be a local role. You know, when I first joined my party, I think I had a letter from HQ that said, here's your badge. Here's a little manifesto book. Go get them. And for 2 years, I didn't really do anything in the party. I joined in 2017 and that was about it. It was only really a letter from a local member who said, hey, do you want to come and join our our one meeting a year that we have that really got me involved, which sort of got me on the path to working at ALDC, working with general elections, working with all of you. So I think there needs to be a better structure for engaging new enthusiastic people and perhaps putting them in contact with people who've had that experience, people who can offer training, people who can almost mentor new enthusiastic individuals and bring them into a position where they can then mentor people. You know, I think now working in the Lib Dems for nearly a year seriously, I could probably say that I could give training on a certain number of subjects, mainly digital, as that is my bread and butter. But we had a young gentleman who came and joined the party as a supporter in Morecambe, who, bless him, was only 13, 14 years old, who said to me, I want to make a difference. I've read up on the manifesto and this is the party for me. And I said, fantastic. What kind of things do you want to do? And he said, well, I know I can't really knock on doors by myself yet. Bless him, he's far too young. But, you know, he helped me with deliveries. I taught him Page Plus, which is slowly becoming a bit redundant now, with Affinity Publisher coming into its own.
My political career, when I was 14, and I look back at some of the people that I've known all that time, so that is years, and I look at Tony Greaves, still a councillor in Pendle. I look at Ian Brodie-Brown, who was a young Liberal with me. I can go right round the country and see a couple of councillors in Milton Keynes who were young Liberals at that time. So perhaps one of the key questions we ought to ask is, how do we get people involved at 14, 15, 16 and 17? And how do we keep them in the party? Because when I joined, the young Liberals were actually more important than the Liberal Party, because we campaigned, we did things. We got right up the nose of Joe Grimmon and Jeremy Thorpe. We generated publicity and excitement. Now, we haven't got a young Liberal branch in Liverpool. There hasn't, not without trying. So we've got to involve those young people and make it a place where, oh, yes, there's your leaflets. Bye-bye, off you go. We'll see you with the next. Let's have some fun. Why aren't we having fun? We have fun when we do these things, which is why we do them, isn't it?
It's always hard to change things because the people who need to vote for change are those who would lose some status or would lose what they see as I don't know, gravitas or something that comes with being the third paperclip secretary of the subcommittee on whatever. I think that there are novels written about Byzantine, about complex organisations and multi-layered things so that nobody knows where the decision is actually taken. And we all, as Liberals, go, but we don't need concentrations of power. That's a bad thing. We're against that sort of thing. Everything needs to be taken. And then we put layer upon layer upon layer and have to make it representative, because without having a rep from each of the nations and from diversity groups and whatever, we don't seem to be able to do a terribly good job of getting a mixture of people. And we end up with it being so complex and taking so much time that we don't have any energy left to spend fighting the people we should be fighting and fighting for the people we should be fighting. And I think this report, Dorothy Thornhill's report, gives us a poke in the right direction, I really do. That if we don't sort this stuff out, we're just going to end up going round in the same sorts of hidden behind democracy circles and not actually getting stuff done. And
for me, I actually think... Sorry,
how do we win more elections? How do we get more Lib Dems elected? And so many of these bodies don't have that as their objective, in my experience.
And it's one of my favourite paragraphs from the actual report. It says, it appears that our functional purpose, as in winning seats in election, has too often become second to internal discussion and management. Much feedback suggests that resources are being deployed on committees primarily concerned with operational decisions and the minutiae of purposes and agendas, rather than actually going out and getting elected and winning.
But a lot of the people who want to serve on these committees, and you are clearly an exception, John, don't particularly want to be elected. They quite like their little comfort zone in the way Lisa said. So, one firm proposition. We're going to mandate you, I hope, from today. There are four of us from the Northwest. Let's just go down, if we have to have one at all, to one regional conference per year. Why we have two, I don't know.
You
I
have
try
two
and avoid
regional
them
conferences
really
a year?
They're dreadful.
Yeah.
We only have one in Yorkshire.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, if I could just, I'm going to dare to disagree with Dorothy Thornhill, actually, because I think one of the differences between the Liberal Democrats and, say, the Labour Party is that actually our purpose is not to get elected and to win elections. Our purpose is to build and safeguard a free, fair and open society. Winning elections is the primary means by which we do that, but it's not the only means. And so actually, I think one of the things that we need to be doing is thinking... And I don't think it actually contradicts anything that, you know, you've all just been saying, but I think it's actually, you know, how do we bring change? Now, the primary means by which we bring change is winning elections, but actually it's also about campaigning. It's about campaigning on issues and delivering change through issues. And I think that's part of how we engage with our members, because winning elections is a very long process, and it often involves, you know, delivering leaflets in the snow and other things which could in no way be called glamorous. Whereas actually, you know, if we can engage our members to deliver change, whether that's, you know, a local change to, I don't know, homelessness regulations or something that could help people's lives, or whether it's a national change, actually that is another way in which we can help people feel engaged with the party, stay involved through that sort of long electoral cycle, including in the difficult bits, but actually be true to our values and our purpose in our constitution, which is not just about winning elections. It's about the result of winning elections. It's about why we're doing it. And I think that's what we need to be true to.
And I think that's where we're going to have to end it, because I do realise that Laura is incredibly busy and we often interrupt her right in the middle of the day. But thank you all very much for being on this one. We're going to do more going forward. We had all sorts of things planned about working with what we do with working with Labour and the Tories and whatever else going forward. All listeners, please do download and watch and subscribe, etc. Me and Richard are going to be interviewing Party President Mark Pack next week, so you'll have another episode coming. All I can say is thank you so much to the panel. Really appreciate it. We're going to have more episodes coming up, because we've got to talk about leadership and everything else coming up. We're no longer going to have an autumn conference. It's all going to be virtually, like we alluded to briefly. How is that going to change? What are we going to do? Are we finally going to get dragged into the 21st century as a political party?
20s would be good.
Yeah.
If I may, John, just before the end, there are any young liberals listening that would like me to bring up any questions or any points, please feel free to send me them at OwenLambert1 on Twitter. Or if you have me on Facebook, just send me a message.
Absolutely. And thank you to all the people that asked questions and helped us kind of prepare for today's episode, because the repercussions from this report are going to go on. And, you know, and for people like Lisa who are on the board, who are in the hierarchy of our party, you know, we need to keep them to account and make sure they listen to us. But thank you all very much for listening. Do follow everything to do with the Lib Dem Pod at Lib Dem Pod on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Do, like you say, subscribe to us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. It's been absolutely fantastic to have all your questions for this episode. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.